Blog Talk Radio.
Reiterate, what do I mean when I say brothers and sisters? I mean those who have a unity of purpose. And that unity of purpose is to have justice with a program identified with justice, with a political position identified with justice, not an amorphous democracy and justice. But let us begin what I believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And I'm going to be repeating that because it is so true and it becomes so obvious every day. But our program this evening is on current events, what is happening today. And in terms of current events, I know that that song, when I listen to Nina Simone sing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, I'm reminded of a time when the sun was shining, the future looked good. We were fighting for community control in New York City, and that meant jobs. That meant an ability to educate our children. Things were looking good, and we will discuss what happened to that. But right now, this is, and as I say, a very historic election period in America. It is historic because the two-party system, the dictatorship of the two-party system that Hugo Chavez of Venezuela came to the U.S. and talked about is beginning to show cracks. And the advent of Mr. Trump is not anything new. What it is someone dared say about America what it really is. And when he talks about America strong again, he has all of the keywords, all of the code words, but he has meaning to them, and everybody knows exactly what it is. But I am not frightened by that. It just tells us what is happening, what is real, and it takes the blinders off. And here we are in New York State, where there's a contest between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And that takes off some of the blinders. Also, if you dare look, we see and we find out that the Democratic Party is the greatest denier of votes to half of the red states in the country. They are shutting down people's right to vote. And I'm not one who says voting is going to change anything. But I'm saying to people who believe in voting, look and see what's happening in New York City. And we see that the number that was given to us today, that 360,000 potential voters will not be able to vote this evening in the primary because of chicanery of the Republican and Democratic Party in New York. And they are all in it because they want to keep the status quo. But let me move forward as to what does this election mean to people of color? And I tell you that what it means is that after the election, now and in November, we are still going to be the caboose on the train. When the train moves fast, we will move as the caboose, and when it moves slow, we will be moving slowly, but still the caboose, not the American dream of our children moving forward. It will be business as usual. And I tell you, and I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say, Bernie Sanders is going to surprise everybody in New York. He's going to be equal to Hillary, or he's going to beat Hillary. But what does that matter to us? What that matters to us as progressive people, people who have a unity of purpose, that we will be separated further from the train because we have no dog in this fight. But those who have progressive thoughts, those who are looking to support those who have supported us, our political prisoners, and I'll even go back to those in the Democratic Party, Cynthia McKinney, we are going to be further behind because we did not or do not have input into those people who go to the polls. And one of the things that happened many years ago at a conference in New York, the Left Forum, we had the gentleman, the in-house communist who speaks out. And after Obama's first 4 years, he supported Obama, and many of us progressives did not support Obama. He got up in a Cornel West got up at the convention and said, "Don't blame me, you voted for him too." But there were those of us who stood up and shouted, "No, we didn't, no, we didn't." And to our surprise, there were not many who stood with us, who understood from day one who and what Mr. Obama was all about. And so now we are 8 years later, and what does this election mean to us? Because we have these Negroes, and Glenn Ford says it best, Brother Larry Pinckney says it best, who are representing us in the Democratic Party, are all supporting Hillary Clinton, and I'm not even going to try to begin to tell you about the evils of Hillary Clinton. But because in New York, to a person, every black politician, is supporting Hillary Clinton. And that means they're supporting the dying of the dying. This right-wing Democratic Party is going out of style, not only for the Republicans, but for the Democrats. And that support is going to lengthen that link, that line, that chain that carries the caboose is going to be extended about 10 more feet. But let's get into the election. We talked about what government by murder is, and I see one of the saddest things in the election was that Hillary Clinton had gathered black women whose children were the victims of the army of occupation, which we euphemistically call police violence. They are dead. These women have lost their children. And Hillary Clinton called them together in Washington with a notebook and a pad, no reporters, no media, and sat down. And when they came out of the meeting, the black woman said, "Hillary feels our pain." That kind of reminds me with what Bill talked about. He felt our pain, and we ended up in jail en masse. And now Hillary feels our pain, and she has done worse. She has gathered these women at a breakfast and then sent them throughout the country to campaign on her behalf. And so I remember sitting and telling to a person, I says, "Black women oppressed, used, and abused 4 times. They were used and abused during slavery. They were used and abused as the wives and mates of an abused male society that came home to them and with their rage took it out on the black women. They were used and abused as the people who could get jobs as opposed to black men being blacklisted by being black, living, breathing while black. Women had to work for next to nothing to keep the home going. And now we find that below, there is below, and Hillary has abused them again, and they are out campaigning on her behalf. And I've been signaled here that I have gone beyond my time, and I will try to come back and talk to you about death by black people by suicide. And we will have our other guests come in and keep us up to date. As you can hear from my voice and what I'm saying, we are in trouble. But our agenda is now and always has been support those who have supported us. And we have to get over this nonsense of those who supported us in this war. And I tell you, the war on drugs is a war on us, people of color. And surely you know by now that a war on terrorism is a war on everybody. That we must understand this and side with those who have sided with us. Those who, our army against that army the army of occupation of the we call them the police that are attacking us and killing us every day. Those who understood that and took up arms against them must be protected. We must defend them with our vote, and I tell you that there is no politician in America running today on the position of release, the prisoners of war, the prisoners of conscience. Those who protected the black community are who are in jail today. It is so bad that some of our political prisoners say, I'm going to stop calling myself a political prisoner because nobody out there is listening. We must put an ear to that. We must be ashamed of ourselves that any of our heroes would ever think that, because we're not going at it in a successful way, and failure is not a success. And I've been given the cutoff sign again, so I'm going to turn this over to Betty Davis before I get too carried away.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. As always, we follow your lead. And I want to acknowledge and apologize for the extended opening tonight, but our microphone clicked off unexpectedly. I want to acknowledge that Brother Larry Pinckney's in the house, Sister Lynn Stewart is in the house, Sister Ann Lamb is in the house, and I believe Brother Tom Syracuse is in the house. And we have all of your mics open. And we will start off, as we usually do, with our brother who coined the phrase, the Negroidian traitors. So, Brother Larry, are you in the house and are you ready to go?
My sister, I am in the house and I am ready to go. I want to thank you, love you, my sister. Give my love to you, Sister Betty Davis, to our dear, dear sister, Lynn Stewart, and our stalwart fighter, ongoing fighter, Brother Ralph Pointer. All power to the people, because the struggle goes on. It has only just begun. Remember that song? It's only just begun. You know, the first time I heard that song, I heard it by the Carpenters, and then I heard it again by none other than the late, great Curtis Mayfield. And when I listened to it by him, sister, I went, oh, my God. Now I get the words of the song. The struggle, we've only just begun, and we will win this struggle if we carry on and stay true to it. So all power to the people, and especially to our listening audience, love you, brothers and sisters. Now, I want to get right down to it and stay succinct, because I know there are other people who definitely need to be heard. I want to refer to two articles. From the Black Activist Writers Guild. That's the Black Activist Writers Guild. We just call it BAWG, B-A-W-G, for short. The first article is entitled, We Beg Your Pardon, America. Excuse us while we puke. Again, it's entitled, We Beg Your Pardon, America. Excuse us while we puke. It was initially published in the Black Commentator back in 2007, and then again it was republished in the Cleveland Indymedia also in that year. And I would urge everyone to check it out, because what it's talking about is the hypocrisy, the fantasy, if you will, of U.S. politics, U.S. corruption. And what this means for all people, with an emphasis upon black people, but we're talking about black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, but with an emphasis upon black people, all right? And, you know, Brother Ralph referred to, in our topic tonight, black women, how they have and are still being used and abused by none other than the system in its entirety, but also specifically by Hillary the Butcher. I say that again. Let me say it again. Hillary the Butcher Clinton. That's right. Hillary the Butcher Clinton. You know, the one who said, we came, we saw, he died, referring to the murder of the former head of state of the North African country of Libya. Anyway, let us keep this in mind. But I want to refer to a black woman who made it crystal clear. Yeah, she was a gun-toting, no-nonsense, for real sister, huh? Her name was Harriet Tubman. That's right. See, they don't tell you she packed the piece and knew how to use it, all right? Harriet Tubman said, I freed 1,000 slaves. I could have freed 1,000 more. If only they knew they were slaves.
Yeah.
And that was back in the time when they were in chains. Come on now. This is the 21st century. Wake up, my brothers and sisters of all colors. Black, white, brown, red, and yellow. Wake up. All right? The next article I want to refer to, also from the Black Activist Writers Guild, is an article. It's entitled, or it's titled, The Pimping of Black America. Why much of the corporate media supports Barack Obama. Now, that article came out back in 2008, written by myself, obviously, we could change it and call it The Pimping of Black America, Why Much of the Corporate Media Supports Hillary the Butcher Clinton. All right? Same difference. Drone Man, Barack Obama, Hillary the Butcher Clinton. We need to wake up, sisters and brothers, our political prisoners, our women and men and women political prisoners are dying, are being murdered in the gulag of the U.S. political system. They are gulags. They're not mere prisons. They are gulags. They are torture chambers. I know. I speak to you as someone who spent 10 years in those gulags. I understand it. All right? So I would urge you, please, to look at both of these articles. The article that I just mentioned, the latest one, well, not the latest one, but the article that I just mentioned earlier, We Beg Your Pardon, America, Excuse Us While We Puke, Black Activist Writers Guild, and the second article that I'm referring to, The Pimping of Black America, Why Much of the Corporate Media Supports Barack Obama, and let us insert Hillary the Butcher Clinton. Look, we must support our political prisoners. We've got to get them all out, all of them. If we don't, we're not even human. Come on now. Our brothers, our sisters are being tortured in the gulags of the U.S. system of torture, and that's what it is. They're dying. They're being slowly killed. We cannot allow that to happen, whether it's Mumia Abdul-Jamal, Leonard Peltier, Reverend Edward Pinckney, Seth Hayes. I mean, it's an endless list, as Gil Scott-Heron, the late, great Gil Scott-Heron said. It's an endless list that won't be missed. Let's get rid of that list. Let's free our political prisoners. And in so doing, let's free ourselves. Any politician who does not support our political prisoners does not support our support. And by the way, deserve our support. But let me point out, by the way, that our dear sister, Cynthia McKinney, sent out, and Betty and Ralph and Sister Lynn are all aware of this, a strong, strong call for the support of our political prisoners. But, of course, that's Sister Cynthia McKinney. That's another strong black woman, all right? That's another strong woman, all right? Just like Sister Betty Davis, just like Sister Lynn Stewart. All right, I'm going to stop right now. All power to the people. Free our political prisoners. Free them all. Free them now. Free ourselves. Thank you so much. All power to the people.
All right.
Thank you so much. We can always get the truth where it's from when we speak with Larry Pinckney and we listen to what he's had to say. And the proof of the pudding is in the eating. He has been telling us truth for many, many a year. And I know when we started this program, I used to say to Mr. Larry Pinckney, I'm getting tired of saying to you that you told me so. And I will say it again, he told us also what was going to happen, and here we are, and it is on us to do something about that. And so let us go forward on this program to Sister Lynn Stewart. Lynn, are you there? Lynn, are you with us?
Ralph,
I hear
scratch.
I hear.
Yes,
voice.
I can hear you, but thank
you. Ralph.
Okay,
there
he
is.
Getting. Okay,
you hear
Lynn.
Me?
I can hear you
coming?
Now. Okay.
Yes?
Go ahead, Lynn. Tell us what you have
okay.
for us.
Okay, we're going to have to work out this, these sophisticated headsets. Anyway.
One of your grandchildren or great-grandchildren to help you out. But go ahead,
Lynn.
That's
what I'm
going to
need.
We're waiting for
no
your
question.
Word.
Okay, I want to start, of course. I have to start because most important is to remember another warrior of ours who has gone down in battle, in prison, not in the free world, if it is such a place, but there is, relatively speaking. And that, of course, was Luis Valenzuela Rodriguez. He was Apache mestizo, part of the Chicano movement as it existed in the 60s and 70s, and he died last Thursday in prison, surrounded by his family and friends. He was 60 years old. And also, I just want to mention, also on a sad note, that Matu Shakur was turned down again by the parole board. I hope Ann will have more on this. But it's the same old SOS that we all know about. They once again said that he was not suitable to be released to the community because it was obvious he would be doing the same kind of activities he had done in the past politically. And how did they know this? Because he signs all his letters, stiff resistance. That's one reason. And because he calls himself a political prisoner. So let me say to you, we have got to make those terms, we have got to make those legitimate and words of honor and pride and make these parole boards eat their words. We have got to bring them all home. And I do want to mention there's two important news items today in New York. One, of course, is this obscene primary where you're people are just beleaguering us with ad after ad, and we will know the results. And this is one lady that is not staying up to watch the results. Anybody else who is, I know it's interesting from a political perspective, but frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn whether it's Hillary or Bernie. I see our coming of age, our revolution coming from a different direction. Now, I do want to say that the other big item today, of course, was the sentencing of police officer Lee Young for the murder of Akai Gurley. And I want to bring this up not just because he got probation, and that's in my segment that I think of in my own brain as do the math. If Black Lives Matter, how did this cop get probation? And then I answer that by saying, but he was a Chinese cop. They never got a white cop. They don't even get any of the regular boys in blue for anything more than slaps on the wrist. They actually indicted him, so he was punished, end quote. The other person they went after was a black woman sergeant of the New York City Police Department, and that was in connection with Eric Garner. So you see, the math does still add up. And as Ralph says in his opening, the only time Black Lives Matter is when they are lives that are productive of something for the 1%, the 2%, I would say maybe even the 50%. When they entertain, when they encourage money, when they can be hired for less than the minimum wage. So all of that said, I do want to say, I have to quote from my friend and blooming young poet, that's Raymond Nat Turner, who is such a joy and his work is such joy, and he wrote a poem appropriate for today called Breathe the Burn, B-E-R-N. And he's talking about the elections. And I know that way back in 2002, I mentioned that what they do every 4 years is they have a contest and then they heist the results. Well, Raymond Nat Turner wrote a poem about the same thing, about how it all looks like a hokey pokey. But then he says, then you do the S again in 4 years, as the wily 1% stoked your fears. Set yourself back another decade with the practicing of this charade. And we know, or I think, we should consider elections to be a charade unless any of these politicians will campaign on the most important issue, the issue which unifies us all and we all know is most important, and that is those men and women that are wasting away in prison 20, 30, 40, 50 years. We must bring them all home. So until that happens, this is all charade, and we have to make it, as the song, and I'll follow the lead of my friend, my dear friend Larry Pinckney, until we make it real. Mm-hmm. And making it real this weekend in Philadelphia is the Mumia. It's his birthday. Everybody should get down there. I don't want to take any more time, but I'm just saying there are things happening.
Yes.
Get yourself out there. Do some of the things that are happening. Thanks, Ralph.
Well, thank you so much for that, Lynn. And when you had mentioned that how they turned Matulu down because he said stiff resistance. And I was thinking of Henry Highland Garnett, the famous black abolitionist minister, when his words were, let your motto be resistance. How far we have come when the motto of resistance to imperialist, racist terror gets you extended time, and that we allow a government, a parole board, to exist. And while we run to vote for Hillary, Bernie, Trump, or any of the other buffoons, we have to have an issue of our own. And we are the buffoons and the fools and the betrayer of our future and of our children when we continue to allow this to happen. But don't get me started. Let us go on to our next guest, and we're looking forward to the wonderful words of Joel and others, Tom, etc. But Anne, are you with us?
I am here. I couldn't possibly
be. Let us hear your words of wisdom this evening, Anne.
Well,
please.
I don't know if I have any words of wisdom. I certainly agree with everything that everybody has said so far, especially Larry. He was tremendous. Thank you, Larry Pinckney. And Lynn is always wonderful. Just to go on about a little bit about Luis V. Rodriguez, you know, he's been with Jericho since we were formed. I know a lot of people out here on the East Coast may not know who he was, right? So we did have a very nice tribute that we got from his daughter that I put out on E-List, and it's short. And it starts out by saying, you cannot harm me, you cannot harm one who has dreamed a dream like mine. And that's in the Native American warrior song. Luis Valenzuela Rodriguez left this mortal world on Thursday, April 14, 2016, at 7:28 p.m., surrounded by his family and friends. He was 60 years old. Songs and prayers were offered to honor him from the four directions. Luis was innocent. He fought with determination to prove his innocence for 37 years. Lies were told about him, in the media, in the courtroom. Many let him down and betrayed him, but many more loved him and stood by him. Despite the great injustice that befell him, and despite all the indignities he was subjected to in prison, Luis woke up every morning with a prayer of gratitude, thanking the Creator for another day on earth, even if it meant it would be spent behind bars. His spirit was never broken. His sovereignty never compromised. He walked his path with dignity, always. Luis was no angel. He had his faults. He was human, but he was a good man. He was intense but fair in his dealings with others. He was a man of his word. He shared what little he had with those who had less. He gave guidance and encouragement to many. He counseled the young, hoping to change their perspective on life so they would never have to return to prison. And then she puts in parentheses, you know who you are. Luis was a loving husband, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, son, and brother. His physical body was not home with us, but he was ever present in our lives. He was more of a father, of a husband, than many men out there who get to go home to their families every night. Luis was Apache mestizo. He was a warrior. His medicine was powerful. He died in prison, then came back to life, which was true, then woke up from a coma and rose in his hospital bed to dance to the beat of his daughter's drum. Who does that? Luis Valenzuela Rodriguez, that's who. Luis chose his passing. He gathered us around him to say goodbye and see him out on his journey. He obliterated the prison from his hospital room and from his life, and he passed to the spirit world, a free man. We are proud to call Luis our husband, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, son, brother, cousin, and friend. And that's from his daughter. And then we got this lovely, very short, from Bato Talamantes, who is one of the San Quentin Six. They did time together. And he wrote this very short little piece that they put up, I guess, in the Bayview. Sad and tragic life of imprisonment befell Luis R. every day while inside. They did it all to him over a span of long years until his health broke down and he couldn't walk anymore and wouldn't give him a walking cane nor wheelchair. Had him at Pelican Bay when first opened, then was moved to Mule Creek when a plot at Pelican Bay was discovered of guards wanting him eliminated because of a pending lawsuit and investigation by FBI, etc. He was under constant threat by the guards. Since they claimed he was responsible for the death of two CHP and constantly sought revenge and retaliation every day against him. Orale Luis R. R.I.P. Bato. So that's, you know, another passing, and as we say, we cannot have this continue, and we really must pull everybody out as soon as possible. And also, you know, I know that we'll all be in Philly this weekend, and next Friday, the 29th, we're having a book party for Jaleel, one of our political prisoners, Jaleel Muntakim, 45 years in prison. Man is busy writing poetry, writing blogs, you know. So there's this wonderful new book with this afterword by Ward Churchill, which is tremendous, called Escaping the Prison, Fade to Black. And so we'll be over at Freedom Hall in Harlem, which let me make sure I know where the hell that is. On Friday, April 29th, we're going to start at 7 p.m., still organizing, you know, speakers and things like that, but, you know, it should be a good event regardless, and that will be at Freedom Hall, which is 113 West 128th Street, and you can go to jerichoNY.org, go down the left-hand side, and you will see the event there, and you can click on it. And as soon as we have more people lined up, we will be adding them on to the program.
And I'm going to once again interrupt, too, because I had wanted to say that there are going to be funeral proceedings or whatever way you want to call it in your own belief system for Luis V. Rodriguez, and that will be in Sacramento, California. For any of our friends who have friends or who are listening in from Sacramento, that will be on the 30th of April.
Okay,
thank
good.
You.
Thank you.
Sorry, Ralph, to interrupt.
No, thank you. That's very important. And I had forgotten to mention that. It was at the end of everything.
It was on the end of everything. Right.
They're looking possibly at April 30th services here in Sacramento. So as soon as we get any information on that, of course, we'll send it out. And if people can hopefully come to Philly this weekend, I certainly plan to be there at least on Saturday for the march. And then hopefully we'll see a whole bunch of people next Friday come out for Jaleel. This is, you know, he's going up to the parole board June 14th, Che Guevara's birthday for the ninth time. All right. You know, doesn't have too much hope in the parole board, of course. But he does definitely want people's support. You know, there's an online petition people can sign. And he's also, if you go to freejaleel.com, there's a whole fact sheet. If you want to write a letter, take the time. If you know him or you've read his writings, you know, it's very important that, you know, people like to sort of throw their hands in the air around this issue. And I'm like, you know, well, I can feel that way myself sometimes because, you know, every 2 years we run all these campaigns and most of the time they are not successful. But we can't not do it. You know, we just can't not do it. That would be wrong, you know. So we do have to come up with other ways to get our people out for sure. But since this is what we have for now, I would certainly encourage people. I was at the Anarchist Book Fair on the weekend. We got lots and lots of signatures on the petition offline that people signed. So, you know, it's important. It's important that people take a step. It's important that people begin to even, you know, if you think about it, if somebody could do 45 years in prison, how hard is it for you to click on a link and put your name on a petition? You know, I mean, that's very minimal. Very minimal. You know, we're not asking you, you know, to go and do a hunger strike. We're not asking you. That might be a good idea, actually. But, you know, this situation is getting really, really bad. And in the prisons themselves, with all our prisoners, another thing, Ralph, when you talk about all the people who can't vote, don't forget all the prisoners who are sitting in prison who can't vote, right? That's like, what, 3 million people who can't vote, you know? Not that there's anyone for them to really vote for, but, you know, they have no way to participate whatsoever.
And remember, when they get out, they still can't vote.
Right. And that is an issue that Jalil actually took up many moons ago, and he did a whole campaign around that of restoring voting rights to felons, quote-unquote, which we, of course, did not get. But
and the thing that we must remember in New York State that I know of, and I assume in many other states, that the reason why they have the prisons in upstate communities was to support the economics of the upstate community, because I remember in the 60s when the Bronx was like a bombed out city, and I said, if you're going to have prisons, let's build them in New York where the prisoners will have the parents and the friends will have access to the prisoners. We will have jobs building the prisons, and they will be in their homes where they will not be so easily tortured. But
exactly.
Who was against it? The Democratic Party, the ministers, the black ministers I'm talking about, and the so-called poverty pimp organizations. Look it up. Go to your computers. They made stupid statements like, we don't want those criminals in our community. And I say, the damnedest fools on the planet. But the man understood, and he put the white farmers out of business because they have industrial farming nowadays that's polluting the land and the water and killing them and growing crops that you don't dare eat. But the small farmer got a job as a corrections officer. And so their communities get federal funds based on the number of people in their communities, and they count our prisoners as members of these upstate communities, and they are funded on that basis. And therefore, they have no homelessness in the North Country. But let me, I've been given the hook one more time, and have anything more to say, and we will move on with Tom Syracuse.
Okay.
Is that all right, Ann?
That's fine. All I just want to say is keep everybody in your heart and keep our prisoners close to us and continue to do exactly what we're saying that we're doing, and we will win. Eventually, we have to win. There's the alternative, as you said, Ralph, many moons ago, is not acceptable. You know, this is not acceptable. It is not acceptable that our freedom fighters are dying in prison. It is not acceptable that resistance is now something that is considered to be criminal. That is not acceptable. It is just not acceptable. You know, people want to have this illusion that we live in some kind of democratic society. I don't know where they're coming from, because as far as I'm concerned, we've been living in a fascist country for a long, long time. And, you know, if every 4 years they want to give us the illusion that we somehow have some voice in the matter, that's all fine, but we really do not. So, you know, let's keep focused on what we need to do. That's all. Free
them
all.
Thank you so much, and thank you,
Ralph.
Much love. And Tom, are you in the house?
Yes, I am, and I'm so glad that what the previous speaker said about an illusion of living in a democratic society. You know, you get these so-called liberals or progressives that say somehow we've lost our way, that we need to go back to an earlier period when we were more democratic. All of that, of course, is an illusion. The problem is that people have to realize where the truth is. I believe it was Jesus who said, "The truth shall make you free." We can never be free until we know what the truth is. And how do we know what the truth is? We have the capability within ourselves to do that kind of study and research into the kind of system in which we live and the history of that system. We cannot depend upon the mass media, upon the political establishment, upon the educational system, upon our religious these churches. We have to depend upon our own ability. I'd just like to say a few words about voting. Now, this country had a revolution, and the vote by an elite, a domestic elite here in the 13 colonies, against an elite in England that was holding down their ability to become wealthier than they were. And after the revolution, they introduced the vote for themselves. The only people that were able to vote after the adoption of our Constitution in 1789 were males, and most of them were white, who had property. Of course, women were not allowed to vote. Indigenous people were not allowed to vote. The overwhelming number of blacks who were slaves, they not only were not allowed to vote, but to add insult to injury, they were counted as three-fifths of a person, so that the white slave owners in the South would be able to have more of a vote than people in the North. And, of course, tradesmen who had no property, they were not allowed to vote. So the overwhelming majority of people who lived here were not allowed to vote. Now let's fast forward to 2016. And what kind of a situation do we have with the extension of the franchise? The overwhelming majority of people in this country are not allowed to vote. As was pointed out, most of the prisoners in our jails are not allowed to vote. Through redistricting, gerrymandering, and all kinds of other tricks, many people of color, more and more of them, cannot vote because their vote will not count. We have a situation in Brooklyn where 60,000 people have been disenfranchised because the Board of Elections somehow made a mistake and changed their voting registration, and they're not allowed to vote. And so it goes on and on. The majority of people in this country are not allowed to vote. Immigrants, documented immigrants, who are here so-called legally, and they work, and they pay taxes, and they live here permanently, they are not allowed to vote unless they become citizens. And so it goes on and on. We have not progressed, and we will never progress, because you cannot have a democracy within a capitalist system, a system that is based upon the rule of a plutocracy, the rule of the wealthiest people in society. And that is the truth that the working class has to realize. Otherwise, the working class will never be able to free itself. It will fall prone to the demagogues in the Republican Party who try to hoodwink the white working class into thinking that somehow their freedom is tied to hate, to hating immigrants, hating people of color, or the demagogues in the Democratic Party who hoodwink many people in the black working class into thinking that somehow their freedom is dependent upon those phonies. Their freedom is dependent upon themselves. Only when the entire working class, white and black, join hands and overthrow this corrupt, this immoral, this exploitative system, will they realize the truth, and that truth will make them free.
Thank you so much for that, Tom. And it is interesting that when we talk about struggle, the struggle of the workers, we have to look outward to the European struggle where they are able to have general strikes, or backwards to the history of the struggle of the American workers that were never, never hand in hand. We fought management. We fought the bosses on the same issue. And as my not-so-sainted father used to say, and now a little something for our boys. And we are still looking for a little something for our boys, for the little unions, because we're losing union membership, and we must build, as you said, build together. Thank you for that, Tom, and we will have the forces to confront this corporate juggernaut that's rolling over us all. Betty?
All right, Brother Tom, as usual, thank you, thank you, thank you. Sister Ann Lamb, Sister Larry, Brother Larry Pinckney, Sister Lynn Stewart, right on. We're going to our learned revolutionary, Joel Myers. But before we do that, I want to give a shout-out to a guest that I've been waiting in the wings, 718-8126. Do you want to give us a shout-out, please? 718-8126. Do you want to give us a greeting? Your mic is open. Okay. Hello? Okay. Brother Joel, your mic is open. Feel free to go forward.
Yes, hello?
We hear you. We're
hello.
Waiting.
Yes,
go right ahead, Joel. We hear you.
Well, it's a very high level of discussion tonight. It's the real antidote. I wish more people could were aware of these types of discussions and could listen in, because the elections, on the one hand, they give this illusion of democracy that we can finally participate, have some input or something like that. And during the elections, we have less input, I think, than at other times, because they focus on the electoral circus and they drown out everything else. Like, it's as if nothing in the world were happening, but Donald Trump said this and Cruz said that, and Hillary said something else, and Bernie said something else again. And it's just a round robin. All the news is totally absorbed. All the oxygen is sucked up by this electoral circus, which is the biggest fraud that's ever been perpetrated in world history. Because when you look at the that type of concentration, and you look at the narrow difference, even from Bernie to Donald Trump, this is like a 3-degree difference. And you can't even trust what that would be, because what you hear in the campaigns could be very different from what happens once they get in. Then they pretty much converge on continuing the same brutal enslavement, imperialism, and not to mention total fraud and the colonizing, not only of the world, but the sickest thing, the colonizing right in our minds. They somehow, people are kept unorganized, and what happens is that most people, and I would say maybe even many people that are involved in struggles, they somehow are carrying around a police precinct in their brains that tell them, no, you can't do this, no, you can't do that, here are the limits. Bernie Sanders he's the revolutionary, he's calling for a political revolution, and he's the limit. And nobody even goes near that limit in terms of the way that everything is presented. Now, I don't know if people might have seen, I put out an email post about an experience that I had. I wanted to go see what the rally of Bernie Sanders was going to be like in Washington Square Park. And as I approached towards the park on Broadway, now that's for people that don't know that area of New York City, Broadway is 2 blocks away from Washington Square Park. And on every street along where the park was, and 2 blocks north of it and 2 blocks south of it, you had wall-to-wall police barriers and maybe a dozen cops at each corner. You can't get in. You can't go there. It's too dangerous. Too many people. And it was a total police state presence. So you couldn't even walk down a public street in the direction of supposedly a rally of a recognized candidate who here you're having this election taking place. So it shows that the real limits of democracy, you know, there's a campaign button. It said if elections could bring about change, they would be outlawed. And that might sound like an exaggeration, a figure of speech, but you could see that even at a very early stage, when people begin moving in that direction, right away they're stopped. You can't go there. And it's not just if a lot of people have the determination. I feel in a way that what I should have done, it would have been difficult because of the consideration, the configuration, but I felt I should have tried to push in there to the point of getting arrested. I mean, I thought this afterwards.
I'm going to interrupt with that, Joel, because you fought the long fight and you have been fighting for years, way back with the Vietnam War. You were the warrior who stood up front and said no. And this was, you know, like, and people, you know, you have been a warrior. You can't do it all. I'm glad you didn't step forward, because we have a vicious army of occupation. But the time you were in jail was outrageous. So thank you again, Joel, and we will start with you next week. And thanks, everybody, for being here. And our program is archived, and we're going to put it together better than we have so that everybody can get to it much easier. We're putting it on Facebook. It's on Facebook now. And thanks again, Joel. And I know you'll have a lot to say next week after the results are in. All of my brothers and sisters, that is those who have a purpose of unity and purpose, a unity of purpose. And thanks again. See you all next week.
All right.
Good night.
I wish I could break all the chains.